Good morning. It's Friday, June 1st. It's the local news hour with KPCW. Good morning. Today is Friday, June 1st. Oh my gosh, May is gone. I'm going to introduce to you Charlie Sturgis. He'll be coming in to talk about the Mountain Trails Foundation, summer trails, news and updates. He probably needs no introduction. Leslie Thatcher will be back on Monday. Thanks for tuning in to the KPCW Local News Hour. Today we have U.S. Congressman from the 3rd District, John Curtis. He will be calling in. He's got a primary run against Chris Herod for the Republican nomination, and the primary election is coming up June 26th. Next up after that, Park City Mayor Andy Bierman in with a rundown of last night's council meeting. Then Nancy Gray and Heather Cook from the PC Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. They'll be in to talk about details of the Summer Activities Expo and the party that goes along with it coming up next week. Stay with us for KPCW's Morning Local News Program. KPCW News Time is 8:10. I've got Charlie on the line with us to give us an update on the Summer Trails report. Charlie, are you there?
Actually, it's Laura this morning. Oh. Charlie is out of town, so good morning.
Good morning, Laura. How are you? Apologies
on
that.
I'm doing great.
Thanks for calling.
What's that?
I said
yeah,
apologies.
Sure. No problem. So, I'm calling out the trails report today. We've got most of the trails above the mid-mountain level are good to go. All of the trails below the mid-mountain level are good. And, of course, Round Valley is just awesome right now. So if you have a chance, get out on the trails this morning before it rains. And then we've got a few things that will impact the trails, but not in a huge way, and just for a brief moment. We've got National Trails Day tomorrow, starting at the Old Ranch Trailhead. We're going to be working on the new trail that it's actually a directional flow trail down from Radiman Ridge to the Old Ranch Road Trailhead. Again, that's tomorrow. We're meeting at the Old Ranch Road Trailhead at 8 o'clock in the morning for National Trails Day. We're asking that you bring your gloves and some water and just be prepared to be out working in the dirt for a couple of hours. There will be a lunch sponsored by Red Rock at the Red Rock Brewing in Kimball Junction after the workday. Also, I believe that Basin Recreation is doing a National Trails Day. I don't know the details on this, so if you want to support Basin Rec, go over to their website and check out their meeting place. Also, tomorrow, over in the UOP trail system, there's going to be a little kids trail running race. So if you're in for a good laugh or you have some time and you can volunteer, go check out Moose on the Loose, a bunch of the little diddles running around on the trails. It's really cute. So I'd highly recommend that if you've got kids, get out there and get them out for some exercise tomorrow morning. And last, before we close off, we've got the Round Valley Rambler Half Marathon and 7K. Those will be on June 16th. Those are fundraisers for the Mountain Trails Foundation. They'll start and finish at the Silver Summit Parkway Trailhead. Again, that's June 16th. Starts at 8 a.m. We'll be out of there probably by 11. Jupiter Peak Steeplechase and Mid-Mountain Marathon are the two other races that comprise the Triple Trail Challenge. Again, all fundraisers for the Mountain Trails Foundation. And, we hope to see you out in the trails soon, Park City.
Thanks, Laura. Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour, News Time 8:14. I'm Carolyn Murray, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher, who will be back on Monday. My first guest this morning is John Curtis. He is the District 3 U.S. Congressional Representative. He won that seat in the general election last year. It was a special election. He is a former mayor from Provo, and he is being challenged by Chris Herod in this primary election. Jason Chaffetz left office early last year, and a special election was held. District 3 includes Utah County and covers into the southeastern portion of the state to the Four Corners area. Registered Republicans in Wasatch County, part of our listening area, will be voting in June's primary for one of these candidates, who will then go on to run as the Republican nominee in the general election. Welcome, John Curtis. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good to talk to you.
So, John, Chris Herod says the caucus convention system is a constitutional issue. He says he does not support House Bill 54, which gives candidates access to getting on the ballot by gathering enough signatures from registered voters. There's a ballot initiative, Count My Vote, which will be on the ballot in November. Where do you come down on this issue? And do you think it is a constitutional issue?
I'm trying to be restrained here. I don't know how that makes any sense at all. I think that one of the problems right now is this concept that some Republicans want to limit involvement and limit participation. And I just think that's really destructive to the party.
Okay. Now, last year he won the Republican convention delegate vote by defeating 11 candidates, including you, in the convention. But then you went on to win the election in a three-way primary.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's now saying, you know, you took 43% of that vote in the August primary. Chris came in with 32%. Tanner Ainge was 24%. Chris, yesterday, when we spoke, he told KPCW that Danny Ainge split the conservative vote. Is this an indication that the current caucus convention system used in Utah maybe really is not representative government?
Well, I think there's a number of examples. I think we'll see a similar phenomenon with Mitt Romney. We saw it with Governor Herbert a few years ago. We saw it in my race, where I only secured 9% of the delegates' votes in that convention, and then went on to win pretty handily in the primary. And, you know, I think you'll see that once again. Now, this year I did do much better in the convention. I beat Chris 59-41%, which I think also betrays his logic that he's somehow the only conservative in the race. He couldn't even prevail with the very, very dominantly conservative convention. So I'm just not sure how that makes any sense.
Okay. So what is happening with the Republican Party, not just here in Utah, but also in Washington? You've been there now for about six months. Yeah. So, the state convention this year, the Republican convention, was a bar fight, as far as I could tell. there was shouting and booing and, people sweeping, the podium. I don't know. It was kind of interesting. And so what's happened? Why is this discourse happening right now?
Well, I'll come back to this concept that there are certain factions of the party that want to preclude others, that there's somehow a purity test, that unless you're somehow pure in their definition, you're not worthy to participate. And that's just counter to everything that makes sense. We want good debate. We want thoughtful conversations. We want to challenge each other on our positions. And that's really what is fun and healthy in politics. And when I see that happening, it gives me a lot of hope. And when I see it being kind of pushed out or eliminated, that's concerning to me.
Yeah, I'm not going to belabor the whole Republican Party issue right now, but I do want to ask, are you supportive of Utah's decision to have a closed primary for Republicans voting in the primary? It just seems that, there's been an effort underway by the primary out group to encourage people to register as a Republican just so they have a chance to vote in that primary, because in Utah, it's a conservative state. And typically the person who wins the Republican primary is going to win the general election. What are your thoughts on that?
Let me answer it this way, and I know it's not exactly what you're asking, but as a candidate and as a current congressman, my goal, my aspiration is to represent all of the constituents. And we've worked really hard in the 6 months. You know, we've gone crazy with town hall meetings. And I'm trying to listen to every voice. I think every voice is important. And, you know, we have parties, and parties play a very important role. And, I'm proud of my party, and I know the other parties are also proud of the work they do, and a lot of good things happen in parties. And I think, once we sift through that party nomination and become the candidate in the general election, I think it's incumbent on that candidate to reach out to everybody. And that doesn't mean that I have to change my positions or my views to to accommodate them, but it means I need to listen and be thoughtful and filter out those things that they're sharing with me that are important and I need to be paying attention to.
Okay. So the federal tax cuts, did you vote in favor of those? So talk a little bit about, you know, the criticism obviously has to do with increasing the deficit by $1 trillion by 2020. Your opponent says Social Security has to be scaled back, that the tax cuts should hold, but we should scale back Social Security, eliminate the Department of Education. The Department of Education is like a $69 billion budget, which is just nothing compared to $1 trillion. That's just a drop in the bucket.
Sure.
But where are you on that?
Yeah, let me tell you, actually, it's kind of a fun experience. I landed in Congress on November 13th, was sworn in. 3 days later, we were voting on tax reform. So I didn't get the luxury of engaging in the debate very much, but I did get to watch that bill as it passed the House and it passed the Senate and then actually went to conference and came out. And it actually was a much better bill, I think, after it went through that process. I'm a strong believer in the concept of letting people keep their own money and that they'll invest it better. I also am really pleased with what we've seen since the tax cut has come through, and I believe the original estimates of that $1 trillion deficit we're seeing in a really dramatic way. I think you'll see some revisions to that. The vast amount of money that's being reinvested back in the economy, whether it's through capital or into employees' wages and bonuses, the money that's being repatriated. Let me just give you a quick number. Our GDP growth rate has been about 1.8% over the last decade. If that moves simply to 2.3%, that covers the whole 100% of the hit to the deficit just simply by moving the GDP growth rate. And we're currently trending just a little bit under 3%. So I'm predicting that it won't have the hit on the deficit that was projected, that long-term it will actually be very good for our economy. And I think we're already seeing the evidence of that.
When you say we're trending 3%?
Just below 3% in our GDP growth rate.
Okay, in the rate of growth.
For the last quarter.
Okay.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you're saying hitting that 2.3% will cover the will offset the impacts of the tax cuts on the deficit. Okay, let's move on to some land use issues. Your District 3. Oh my gosh, you've got
holy cow! You're right.
You've got the Bears Ears National Monument, the Escalante. I guess a portion of the Escalante. Maybe you have all of Escalante. I'm not sure on that.
That's actually Chris Stewart.
Okay.
What I've got, though, and I'd love to talk about, is Emory County.
Okay. And but Bears Ears does fall into your district. And I'd like to talk and understand how much you have reached out to the communities down there, the full communities, not just the, you know, not just the municipalities and getting endorsements from the councils and the mayors, that type of thing, but actually reached out to the people who live there.
Yeah, I think that's a real fair question. And let me tell you what I've done. And also, I think we need to talk about timing. I wish I could have orchestrated different timing, but I didn't have control over that. I'd been in office 3 weeks when President Trump made the rescission, and that obviously put me in a difficult position. But since then, I've been down to the Navajo Nation twice on their reservation. When I went down there, they told me I was the first U.S. congressman to visit them at that location. I'll be going out to visit with the Ute tribe here in a couple of weeks, have a meeting with them, and I'm going to Arizona to visit with the Hopi tribe also in 2 weeks. Those dates have both been set. We've held town hall meetings, both on the reservation and in the region down there, and feel like we have worked really hard to reach out to all the constituents and all the shareholders and everybody with an interest in the area.
And what are you hearing from them? What are they telling you?
Well, you know, what I was going to say is what's difficult is they'll all articulate almost the same goals. I don't care which faction you're talking to. There's great consensus about the end goal. But there is tremendous division and discord about how we get to that end goal and who gets to make the decisions. And that's a lot of the problem, is there's so much mistrust that's been there over the years and has been built up that it's really hard to put a plan together that people can agree to get to an end goal that we happen to agree pretty close to.
Okay, so what's your what would be policies do you think you could support as a Republican congressman representing that district? What would be those policies to?
The bill I've put forward is pretty clear on to answer your question. Let me try to give you a thumbnail of what that is. It does do a mineral withdrawal in the 1.35 million acres, which was the original designation from President Obama. So, you know, that's the environmentalists like that a lot, but they're not content with the bill because of this concept of who gets to control many of the decisions. I put a lot of the control in the hands of the locals, and we build the original President Obama declaration had a commission, but it was not a decision. It wasn't a board with any authority at all. So it was made up of the tribes and things, and had no decision making authority. My bill actually gives them more decision making authority, and I'm a strong proponent of those who live closest to the land know how to best manage the land. Of course, they still are constrained by the many, many layers of federal regulations that go along with the different designations in that area. And I told people all along, I'm flexible on much of this. I need people to come get the input. But what I find is very few people will step forward and tell me what they want, because they either want what President Trump did or what President Obama did, and they don't want to talk about anything else. And those are not options for Congress. Congress's only option is we don't have the Antiquities Act or the designations the presidents are making. But I will tell you this, the Congressional Act is far more powerful and impactful than a presidential designation. And we can do things with the Congressional Act that can't be done with the Antiquities Act.
Okay. Let's move on to immigration. I'd like to know.
Can I touch on one more land issue just super quick?
Sure, sure.
We've put a bill in on Emory County, and it's a really good bill. Unlike the situation in San Juan County, we have tons of agreement from many, many different sides about how we should push forward. It's a very good bill. I hope people will take a look at it. It takes the current wilderness study area, moves it to wilderness. It puts a large amount of area into conservation, but it also has the support of the locals. And so off-road enthusiasts like it, ranchers like it, many of them, and many environmental groups like it. So I really hope people take a good look at that bill. It's for the San Rafael Swell area.
Okay.
And like you say, it's a very different bill in that I have much more consensus on this.
Okay. And what's that? What is that bill registered as? What's the number?
You know, if you hop on curtis.house.gov, you'll be able to get the link there and see all the information.
Great. We'll include that in our information when we report on this. So can we move? Are you good with moving on
Absolutely,
to immigration?
Yeah.
In the news this week, children are being taken away from their parents at the borders.
Yeah.
We've got deferred action again of childhood arrivals. The DACA compromises have not come to fruition. How do you propose we fix immigration problems? And do you support children being taken away from parents at the U.S. borders?
I can't imagine anybody supporting that. That's just, we've got to better understand that. And, of course, we're just finding out details. And I need to learn so much more about myself. But, no, of course, I can't support that. We need to find answers. We owe it to these dreamers. We owe it to our country to find answers. There's so much good that can come from proper immigration policies for our country and for those who would like to come here, and we're missing much of that with our inability to find this common ground. I'm committed to it. I'm optimistic that we can come together as a Congress, that we can bring these answers forward quickly. I do believe in the next 30 days we will see something come to the floor in the House to vote on. You'll see me probably supportive of it, even without knowing what it is, because I want to advance something, much like we did the tax bill, where the House put forward something, Senate put forward something that was different, and then we came together and found the common ground. So I'm anxious to advance something, even if it's not perfect, because I know it can still go through this process and become a better and better bill as it moves along. And I just feel a sense of urgency and that we do need to get something done.
So Chris Herod yesterday said that he thinks the way to fix immigration problems is that there needs to be more judges, more immigration judges. Will that really solve the problem?
Well, I it's not going to solve the problem, but it's a piece of the problem. And I would, you know, we talk, for instance, let me just use this analogy. We talk about border security and putting large amounts of money. And I'm actually an advocate for better border security, but I think some of that money should be spent on things like additional judges. The bottleneck there is causing part of the problem, and inefficient, removing people, you know, back and forth. So that's certainly a piece of it. It's not going to solve it.
Okay. So who are your allies in Congress? Which Democrats can you work with, for instance, to get a DACA bill?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. And people ask me, what's my biggest surprise back in Washington, D.C.? And my answer is, there are a lot of really good people there. And let me just kind of share a fun example with you as it relates to immigration. Henry Cuellar from Texas and I had a chance to travel together, and he's a Democrat. And he's just an amazing man. I really, really enjoy his company. He told me that his father was a cherry picker in Utah. And so here's a first-generation immigrant who's a cherry picker. Second generation is a U.S. congressman. I think it's a really cool story. And there are lots of good people back there that I can work with. And you'll find on immigration that we overlap in things we agree on far more than the things we don't agree on. And we just got to sit down and figure out how to get across the finish line.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one more bombshell question and then let you go. But do you support Donald Trump? I didn't get to ask Chris this question, question or to clarify. He did mention on a couple of occasions that he did support Donald Trump. But I didn't really get to dig into the ethical issues that and deportment, misogynist comments that are on tape. I mean, about sexual assault and paying off mistresses who are pornography stars. I mean, it's all really impacting the dignity of the office. And I just wonder where are you on this?
Well, I don't mind telling you that the things you've just mentioned add a degree of difficulty to everything that I do and everything that happens back there. I'll be quick to point out the number of things that I've been pleased with. Tax reform, we've talked about that. I'm an advocate of that. I'm pleased with a lot of the deregulation that's happening. What's happening in North Korea is almost, many of us, it's almost too good to be true, right, in many aspects. But I'm also quick to point out when there are things that are not in harmony with what I would call the third district. And so the line I've taken is, look, I'm going to jump behind and support those things that are in harmony with the third district. And when there are things not in harmony with the third district, you'll hear me speak out. And if you watch my statements and social media and otherwise, you'll see that I try very hard to represent the third district and the values of the third district in what I see in the presidency.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, John Curtis, for
joining
us. Hope
we get to talk again.
All right. Bye now.
Thanks, bye.
Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Our next guest is Mayor Andy Bierman from Park City. So welcome, Andy. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Carolyn. Happy June.
Thank you. Yeah, happy June. So yesterday in the council meeting, there seemed to be a big discussion about social equity. And ultimately, the council decided not to go with the RFP, but did set aside some money, about $100,000, it sounds like, in the budget.
Yeah,
so what's happening next with this?
Well, we are really trying to determine how we want to approach this, what partners we want to bring in. We've had some proposals or had some ideas thrown out there from various organizations in town that would like to help us with social equity. And council's in agreement that this effort needs to come from the community. There are certainly things internally at the city we can do with our own staff and our own practices to make sure we serve as a good example. But if we're going to work on these community issues, we need community partners. So we are going to look at, I think there is a need for RFP, and it's something we're going to look at. We just didn't want to pull the trigger on it yet. So we set the money aside to help pay for a coordinator, and we're going to bring in our stakeholders and have a discussion to determine better what we need.
And that coordinator may be an employee, may be a contracted arrangement.
We have some in-house help already with Rocio Torres as our latest community engagement person, and a large part of her role is to work on our social equity issues. But we feel like there is a need for a community coordinator, and that's something that the city is willing to help pay for the position. Again, we think it needs to be a community effort, so we want to be a partner, not necessarily the leader in that.
Okay, and the public was allowed to weigh in on this, and one person said something that has not really been talked about much as it relates to social equity, but having to do with homelessness. What is the extent of homelessness?
Yeah, that was Tom Horton.
This area.
I thought it was a great point. We're seeing this all across Utah, that we aren't the only city in town that is concerned about it and beginning to see the lack of housing and lack of affordable housing lead to homeless issues in the community. And I don't think it's an old problem. When I moved here in the mid-90s and worked at White Pine Touring, several of our employees were living in the parking lot. And I know I couch surfed for a while before I could find a place to live. But it's becoming increasingly hard to find housing in town. That's well known. And I think we're going to see issues of homeless rise. It used to be a very urban issue in Utah, and it's spreading out into smaller communities like ours. And we don't have a good plan in place. So it's something I agree with Tom that the city needs to consider and have a better plan.
Do you have any sense of how many homeless people there might be in town at a given time? I mean, especially in the winter.
I think it depends on how you define that. Certainly there are those that have mental illnesses and hard luck issues that end up homeless. And then there are those that are kind of taking a gap year in college and traveling and playing and might be couch surfing or camping. So we need to separate those two because I think there's different solutions. But we don't have a good feel. I would say it's not widespread now, but we're beginning to see signs of it, and I think it could grow.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, I've got a daughter who's living out of her truck up in Jackson this summer. Working in Jackson. I mean, so is that homeless?
I lived in my truck when I was a guide. I spent 3 years where I didn't have any place to live. I lived out of the back of my truck, and it was some of my best years of my life. So that's why I think we need to separate the issue, because there are those that are really in need that have challenges, and then those, it's a lifestyle choice.
Okay.
Either way, I think we agree we need more housing opportunities.
Exactly. Okay. Let's talk about the budget. Councilmember Steve Joyce compared some ridership with our transit system. He's saying that that basically it hasn't changed in 10 years. Is that true?
I disagreed with him at that council meeting a little bit. He was looking back to some numbers. We had a spike in our transit ridership in 2007, 2008. And then the recession hit, and it dropped significantly for a couple of years. And then it's been climbing back but had leveled off lower than that spike. In the last year, it increased about 300,000 riders, which was about a 15% increase. And although Steve is correct, 10 years ago we hit a number close to where we are now. My point was that was a different time. I know, being very involved in the resort industry, during that last economic spike, we had a ton of J-1 workers come to town. And those are workers that mostly came from South America, and they didn't have vehicles. And so they were very active on the buses. And we saw that during other city services. Things like, say, internet at the library was wildly popular back then. I mean, you look at the numbers, and they're off the chart because essentially a lot of these folks, they didn't have cars. They were couch surfing. They were going to the library to access their internet. Today, our workforce is a little bit different, and a lot more of them have cars, so we have different challenges. But I think the way we need to look at it is to look back on the most recent years, and we've seen a big rise in the most recent years, a positive trend in transit. And I think the biggest increases are yet to come, because things like the Electric Express we only brought on halfway through 2017.
Okay. Let's dissect the report on the parking data that was done by Robbie Smoot and Kenzie Colson. They've provided some information about the shuttle that was set up for the employees this winter when paid parking went into effect in China Bridge. And it looks like the data shows that there were 112 riders a day. And if the shuttle's running every 10 minutes, that's 96 trips a day for that 112 people. Is there a way to get more people to ride that shuttle? I mean, and is that cost effective?
Yeah, and the numbers I showed were a little bit higher. It was 190 riders on weekends average and 166 on weekends. But regardless of what they are, they're not where we want them to be. It was a pilot project, and we implemented it with sort of short notice. So I think it has a ton of room to grow. It's something we need to see grow. The people that used it had good loyalty, and we had some successes we can look to there. But it's certainly something that we've invested in, we'll continue to invest in, and see if it grows. And if it doesn't grow, we'll have to look at other solutions.
Well, how do you make it grow?
How do you make it grow? I think that's a reaction to the paid parking is pushing people towards alternatives, these park and ride type scenarios. Homestake, the people that used it said it was great. It was free. It was convenient. They got to work just as quickly. They felt like it was safe because they were dropped off right at their cars. They didn't have to walk into a dark parking garage or up to Sand Ridge. So I think we saw signs of success, but it really needs to continue to evolve and see more use for us to continue to invest in it in the long term.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, the beneficiaries of this are really the businesses on Main Street because there's parking now available for their customers. How much are the businesses invested? Are they part of the cost? Are they providing incentive for their employees to take the shuttle? Should we be asking the businesses to start paying people as soon as those employees walk on the shuttle and paying them for that time that they're spending, you know, adding to their route into work? Because really, that's what it kind of comes down to, that it's the businesses on Main Street that are benefiting.
I'm glad you brought that up, Carolyn, because I think a common misperception is that the city is doing this to the Main Street or the Main Street businesses. And really, the city, the paid parking program and these shuttles are in reaction to a request by the downtown businesses that we address employee parking. And it results out of a study where we realized that more than two-thirds of the parking was being used up by employees every day, and we got asked for help. Of course, it is controversial how we chose to help with the parking, but it was done with much input from the merchants. As far as them making financial contributions, I like your idea of them being willing to pay their employees for their commute in or if it's on transit. And I believe there are some businesses that have policies like that. We would like to see more do that. I do want to point out, though, that these both the paid parking and the shuttles and much of our transit comes from tourist dollars. So the dollars generated on Main Street and our restaurants and our retail go back into these programs to mitigate the impact of the workforce and the tourists. So in a way, they are paying by generating business.
Okay, but it's not a direct. I mean,
no,
there's
we're not
no
asking
participation.
For a direct contribution. No more than we ask our citizens for a direct contribution to ride on our buses. We're proud of the fact the buses are free, but you do pay for those through your taxes.
Sure. So the report says that people are using the program. Mm-hmm. Do we have an idea of, so if you've got 150 people using that on a weekday, how many employees are there on Main Street on a weekday? I mean, are there 500, 1,000?
No, I think you're probably well in excess. Well, I think on the weekends, it's in excess of 1,000 employees. I don't have that exact number, but I believe when we were looking at how many parking spaces are being used by employees, there's about 1,200 parking spaces in the Main Street area, downtown area, including China Bridge, and I believe about 800 of them were being used by employees. So let's hope some of those people are carpooling. That would put the number of employees probably, and some of them are walking, biking to work, so probably in excess of 1,000 employees.
Okay. And our top riding, in at least during the Film Festival, is around 300, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it's
and
interesting.
And I took the shuttle a couple times just to check it out. It really was convenient. There were always people on it. But again, it was the first year. We're retraining long-term habits. And so it's a little anemic. But I do expect it'll grow. And part of it does get hard when you look at the frequency of these. It's a lot of trips. The good news is we're using a small shuttle for that. Hopefully that shuttle will eventually be electric. And if you don't have that frequency, it's not convenient and it won't be used. So it's the quandary you always have with transit. You have to invest to grow it. If you don't provide a safe and convenient frequent service, people aren't going to use it. And so you have to spend the money up front. You have to invest and be consistent and provide that and sort of work through that resistance before you really know whether it's going to succeed.
Okay. And so we're also looking at housing some of our transit drivers, mm-hmm. some of our bus drivers.
Yep.
And Blake Fonsbeck at the meeting, he said that he's had to rent homes apparently for a full year, yet only you know, really having them occupied for the winter season. Can you talk a little bit about that? What does it cost to house a transit employee? And why transit employees? Are there other employees at the city that should be receiving housing stipends of some kind? Or
well, there is a housing stipend program for employees that live in town, all employees. But the transit department, we have particular challenges because of the seasonality of it and the fact that we have so many hires there. You look at most of the growth at the city and hiring, almost all of it is related to transit or our new stormwater department that we had to add 2 years ago. And so a few years ago, we built a project with a large government grant over next to Public Works near the bus barn. I believe that's 11 studio units for transit drivers. We just recently secured a bunch of condominiums over Prospector, which we are going to need to remodel, and we're working with the residents that are still living. Some of those were vacant. Some of them have residents, and we're working with them, finding them new homes. But eventually, those will be transit housing. So we're always looking for opportunities because a lot of the in particular, drivers will come in on a seasonal basis for just a winter, and it's very hard to find a place just for winter here.
So what is how do you measure ridership then? What's the process that the city uses or the transportation department?
Well, you can just look at the overall numbers. I've got it here. You look in 2016, our ridership was 1.8 million. And you look at 2017, our ridership was 2,163,000. So those are gross numbers, and I'm not sure those are always the best numbers because as we add routes, you also have to look at efficiency. But we can look at cost per rider and bus occupancy, a number of different variables. But that's actually been a topic of discussion is what metrics are we going to use to evaluate success in our transit program?
Okay. And then Cindy Matsumoto was presented an Historic Preservation Award. And there were apparently lots of people that showed up for that. The Egyptian Theater was honored with a collage that was done.
Yeah.
And I guess what, this is the sixth year the city has done this?
Cindy wasn't presented with the award. She was the one presenting the award.
Excuse me. Okay.
When Cindy retired after 8 years of serving on city council and many years of working on historic issues around town, we gave her as a send-off, we made the Historic Preservation Award, the Cindy Matsumoto Historic Preservation Award. In her name, to honor her efforts over the years. And so this was the first time, although it's the sixth time we've given out the award, it's the first time it was her namesake award. So we asked her to come in and present that. So it was really nice to see Cindy back. And Marianne Cohn, who's another former council member, she was the one that actually did the art. She's a very talented artist, and she did the collage of the Egyptian, which is outstanding. It's going to be hanging in the halls of Marsac, and I encourage folks to come by and see it. But, we gave out five different awards, and the big winner was the Egyptian. They took home the main award, and when you get the annual award, we commission a painting or an art piece, and that art piece goes up in Marsac of whatever the building is. And this year, again, it was the Egyptian.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. It sounds like maybe you can also see it on KPCW website.
I
guess
hope
Melissa,
so.
I think, posted it. So, okay, one more thing. The Mountaintop Water Emergency, what's that all about?
This is a district that's it's above Sandstone Cove and the top sort of backside of Park Meadows. There's a number of homes up there, I think about a dozen homes that are right on our boundary but aren't within Park City. They are actually in discussions with the city right now for annexation. One of the reasons they'd like to be annexed is because their water system was failing and they'd like to be on our water system. Unfortunately, their system failed before we were able to work out the details of the annexation. So we have worked out an emergency measure where we are piping water up to them right now for a fee, and it's a fairly kind fee in the short term. They are paying just a little bit more than our typical rate holders would, but it escalates over time. And the goal being we want them to address this, either fix their water system or finish the annexation as quickly as possible. But so, it's just something we're trying to help a neighbor out.
And what was the water company that was providing service
to them? They had their own well in Lower Park Meadows, and they piped it up. And my understanding saying is that well was old and it was failing, and it finally, I'm not sure the exact mechanical issue, but I think it finally failed on them.
Okay. And resolution on that is what, sometime in the next few months?
It's a little bit in their hands. I think they could come back to us with an annexation proposal within the next few months, and that would resolve things if they want to go that route. Otherwise, they're going to have to find another water server or work out a long-term deal with the city to provide them water.
Okay. Thanks, Andy. We've got to leave it there.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thanks for coming.
Have a great
in.
Weekend.
Bye now. Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. It's 8:52. Our next guest, final guest for the morning, is Heather Cook with the Park City Chamber of Commerce. She'll be here, to talk about Summer Activities Expo and the party that goes along with that. And it's scheduled for Tuesday at the DoubleTree. Welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So it's a yearly thing, right? This is something that the chamber does every year.
We have the Summer Activities Expo every year at the beginning of the season to kind of showcase our member businesses who have any number of diverse summer offerings. And then in the winter, we have kind of a similar event. It's the Winter Activities Expo.
Okay. And do you invite every business in town to participate as a booth, or is it how does that work?
We invite everyone from the community to attend. In terms of who is at our booths, it's members of the chamber who offer summer activities. So we have anything from members who offer yoga to stand-up paddle boarding. We have Summit Community Gardens there. It's a really diverse mix. We have a great lineup of vendor booths this summer.
Do you have anything new this year? Or
we have, we just had the Alzheimer's Association sign up as a vendor. They'll be promoting their walk that they have this summer. We have Mindful Cuisine, who's going to be doing a cooking demonstration. We're really excited about that. And then we have Enlightened Wellness. They're a new member with us. They're going to be opening a yoga studio in, I believe, August. But they have some summer kind of yoga offerings, and they'll be with us at the expo, too. So we have some new businesses that we're excited to showcase and some old favorites.
Yeah, so you'll have the resorts there. Would they be representing?
Yes, Deer Valley and Park City Mountain will both be there.
Okay. And what about timing, cash bar, that type of thing, food? What's going on with that?
We'll have some great hors d'oeuvres out for folks to enjoy. We'll have some beverages, and then we'll have a cash bar. So make sure you bring some ones and some fives. You can take advantage of that. And then we have some really amazing raffle items that we'll be giving away that our vendors have very kindly donated.
Okay. What kind of raffle items can you give us?
Let's see. We've got some summer lift tickets from Deer Valley. We've got a rafting trip, some zip tour passes, and a few other things that'll be really fun to give away. So there will be some really lucky folks at that event that walk away with some great experiences.
Okay. And then music also you've got?
Yes, we'll have some music by DJ Dolph, and he's helped us out in the past with some of our previous expos, so we're excited to have him back too.
Okay, great. Anything else that people should know about your event?
It's open to the whole community, so grab a friend or grab a coworker and head on over, and it'll be a nice way to end your Tuesday and get excited for the summer.
And the hours, they'll start about 4:00?
Doors right. Open at 4, and we'll wrap up at 7.
Okay, and it's at the DoubleTree?
Yes, on Park Avenue.
Okay, well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bye, Heather.